Sprint gets another bidder.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Monday, the 15th of April, Tax Day. And today, the satellite TV provider Dish Network is making a big bid to get into the mobile space. It wants to buy the country's number three cell phone carrier, Sprint Nextel, for more than $25 billion. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Dish Network is trying to steal Sprint Nextel from the clutches of another bidder, the Japanese telecom giant SoftBank. Dish is upping the price, though, by $5 billion or so. Why? Jeff Silva at Medley Global Advisors says it wants to expand beyond the slow-growing TV business, which faces competition from cable, cellular, and now internet streaming.
There's Netflix out there. You've got, you know, some real headwinds for profits and gaining market share.
Dish wants to offer its customers everything, voice, TV, mobile. The thing is, the dominant mobile players are already doing that, so time matters, and an acquisition takes time.
Verizon and AT&T are expanding their LTE networks, you know, that have faster connections. By the time it's done, they could have locked down a lot more customers.
If Sprint Nextel doesn't take this offer, Dish Network is believed to have its sights on other wireless carriers like Clearwire and T-Mobile. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Today is Tax Day, April 15th, which brings us to what's called the Dirty Dozen. It's a list of the worst tax schemes out there released by the IRS, and the worst this year is identity theft. Peter O'Dowd reports.
The U.S. Treasury Department says identity theft could cost the government $21 billion over the next 5 years. Lisa Schifferle with the Federal Trade Commission gives a few reasons why.
There's a shift in some organized crime from drugs to tax ID theft. The increased use of electronic filing may contribute as well.
They're ripping their hair out. This is an extremely difficult situation.
Adam Levin is chairman of Identity Theft 911, which helps victims restore their identity. He says this is how the tax scheme works. Someone steals your Social Security number, files a tax return on your behalf, and then collects your refund. It takes a victim nearly 200 days on average to get the refund they deserve. Congress is considering a law to force the IRS to move faster, but Levin says the problem is too big.
If you run the wrong database at the wrong moment when the wrong person gains access, you're toast.
The IRS says it has more than doubled its staff working on identity theft this year. I'm Peter O'Dowd for Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
So now we're going to visit a company that sells products almost everyone uses, and yet it sort of maintains the aura and culture of a startup. I'm talking about Google. I visited the company's growing New York office and sat down for an interview with Chief Information Officer Ben Fried. We met in a conference room that looked more like a New York apartment. In fact, the sign on the door said Apartment 5A. Before coming to Google, Fried spent years working on Wall Street.
I had a great career at Morgan Stanley. I started kind of at the entry level. I was, you know, I had studied computer science and I had worked at a startup and so on. I thought working at Morgan Stanley was a great thing for someone with a computer science background to do, especially in the time that I was doing it. But I think it's hard to not be curious about a place like Google, right? I mean, Google was changing the world.
What's the biggest difference between the cultures of the two places? And I'm not talking about Morgan Stanley specifically, yeah. But finance, Wall Street, and this tech world, this burgeoning tech world in New York City and Google.
There are a number of differences that I think are all worth calling out. But they largely really start with the idea that Google is designed to be a product engineering company, right? And that dedication to building great products and doing great engineering, you know, it drives so many other elements of the culture, wanting to be a place that inspires needs, develops great engineers. Morgan Stanley and finance, these were great places where computer science were incredibly important, but they weren't the business of the company.
The business is making money on Wall Street.
Exactly. The business is, you know, all these financial companies do many, many very, very different things, right? But it's all about doing those things and how technology can help do those things, whereas this is about building products and being a great engineering company. And that then drives all these important second-order things.
Is there a difference between the culture here and the culture at headquarters out in Mountain View?
Well, you're asking me to compare Silicon Valley and New York City at some level, right? New York is an interesting place because there's so many industries that are so big here, and technology can have a role influencing all of them. And I'd like to see New York develop as a city with a technology industry that can harmonize with the other industries that are successful here and at the same time have all these great product companies.
Is that happening? If you talk to your old friends at Morgan Stanley, are they trying to be more like Google these days?
You know, I probably read some of the same newspapers you do, and I think the kind of workplace environment, for example, that Google has tried to create, I think has had a pretty big influence on the world of technologists at large, right? I think in my previous job, I had teams all over the world, and I went and I visited teams in Budapest and London and New York and Hong Kong and Tokyo, right? And kind of every place I visited, we had beige tables, beige computers, O'Reilly Associates books on programming computing. And it was all, and now I look, you know, we're sitting in this room that's apartment 5A. Is that what it is? And
yeah.
I think about the degree to which the conversation has changed about the benefits that employers can provide and the workplaces they're trying to create. I think that Google has had a big, big effect on changing the expectations.
Well, Ben Fried, Chief Information Officer here at Google, thank you so much.
Jeremy, thank you so much for having me. It's been great talking to you.
And finally, more evidence that the colder it is, the more people drink. The Canadian Statistics Office says the Yukon Territory leads the nation in per capita alcohol sales, more than $1,300 a year compared with a Canada-wide average of $724. It is mostly beer, by the way. Here in the U.S., the chilly Dakotas are apparently some of the booziest states, followed by Washington, D.C. I'm not sure what their excuse is. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.